Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Leonard Cohen turns 80 on September 21st, 2 days before his 13th studio album comes out, and he's never been more popular. Cohen has long fascinated his chroniclers, hinting at a performative aspect of his public persona, disappearing for long stretches, and candidly discussing his battles with depression and lost love. Jeff Berger has written extensively about music and other topics, and he's the editor of the new book, Leonard Cohen on Leonard Cohen, Interviews and Encounters, which is out from Chicago Review Press. And it's my pleasure to welcome Jeff Berger to the roundtable. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
How do you explain his late-in-life success?
Oh, gee, I don't know whether he could explain it either. that's a tough one to start with. I think there's a bit of serendipity. He's always had a cult following. And I think, you know, maybe some of the events that came to him late in life, like getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, helped draw attention to him. Of course, he had had a long period before this late period burst of fame when he was, by his choice, out of the public limelight. He was, you know, he didn't give any interviews for more than a decade. And then there was the fact that his song Hallelujah was recorded by lots of people and became a classic. And that helped draw attention to him as well.
In the interviews that you've gathered in this collection, is there any indication early in his career that he expected to or wanted to still be doing this at this age?
No, I think he's the kind of guy who just took it as it came. He never really had a long-term plan, except that he saw himself almost from the beginning as a certainly as a folk singer before he was recording. He performed with a local group in Canada, and as a writer, he flirted in college with some other things. He had a variety of odd jobs, but this was what he always wanted to do. But I don't think he envisioned himself being this successful, much less doing it for this many years.
It's interesting, though, because he got a pretty late start. I mean, he was, I think, almost in his mid-30s when he, you know, began his musical career with a solo album, right?
That's right. As far as recording an album with Columbia, he did start late and continued late. But he, well before that, he was performing with this group called the Buckskin Boys. He was always interested in folk and country music from the time he was a teenager. And he was certainly writing, although for a very, very small audience. He was doing poetry that went into mimeograph publications with a circulation of 300 or 400. So yes, as far as being on the big stage with a Columbia album, late start, but he started way before that.
How did you decide what to include in this book?
Well, it was an exhaustive process of, you know, first seeing what was out there and then deciding, and also finding what was available to use. There were some things I just couldn't get. There were some gems that came to me that, you know, somebody, Stina Dabrowski in Scandinavia, sent me the video of interviews with Cohen that had not been broadcast or published in full anywhere. So there were some things that just came to me. And then I just had to go through and narrow down. There's a little bit of repetition here and there, but even that was interesting to me, the kind of things he chose to repeat.
Give us an example of some of those recurrent themes.
Oh, he even told the same jokes a few times. He talks repeatedly about depression, certainly about Zen, and mentions a few of the same things. There are nuances, and his whole approach to interviews and the degree of candor, I think, changes over the years. In the early interviews, it's a bit more of a pose. I think he's trying to sound project a certain image, whereas in the later interviews, he's pretty much speaking from the heart and saying whatever he thinks about his past relationships and his battles with depression and so on.
How does his output in terms of interviews over the years, you know, which does include long stretches of not really doing interviews, and it includes long stretches of talking to anybody who wanted to know anything. How does that compare with some of the other artists kind of his ilk and their approach to the press?
Of his ilk, I don't know if there is anybody quite of his ilk, but aside from that period when he didn't talk to anybody, he's given kind of a remarkable number of interviews for somebody who had a Zen nickname of the Silent One. He talked to a lot of people, and for the most part, at great length. He would talk to small publications as well as large ones. He was courteous to interviewers from who had no experience. There were one or two in the book who were interviewed him when they were teenagers and had no credentials, but he was unfailingly polite to everybody and would talk until they said they were done, which was kind of unusual, I think.
Do you notice a difference in some of the overseas interviews? A lot of these were translated into English here for the first time, and he's always been kind of an international artist, obviously not from the U.S. originally, and oftentimes has been maybe more appreciated overseas.
Well, I think it's absolutely right what you say, that he has huge fan bases in Scandinavia and Greece and Spain and Israel and England and France, and maybe more adoring fans in those countries than in the U.S., but I don't notice a big difference in the interviews, because the people who did interview him in the States tended to be part of that possibly smaller fan base, but they were admirers as well.
How long did you spend on this project?
Oh, gee, my family would tell you too long. it was, you know, much, much more than, I mean, I kind of knew what to expect because I had done the Bruce Springsteen book before this, a similar book, although this one turned out to be 50% longer. But before I did either of these books, I would have guessed that a book of merely collecting interviews rather than writing the whole book from scratch would take relatively little time. I had no idea how long it could take to do an anthology. There were lots of things that made it take the better part of a year, all weekend and every evening.
The reason I asked that question is, and it's an immense amount of work and a 600-page book, did you end up liking him more or less, you know, as an artist, as a public figure, when you were done, compared with where you began?
Yeah, I think more. I mean, I got to know him much better. I always liked his music. I bought his first album got a review copy of his first album when it came out around at the beginning of the 70s, and followed his music ever since. But I followed it much more intently in the course of doing this, and watched for the first time some great DVDs of his performances. I think I became a bigger fan, and I certainly was not as acquainted with his interviews as I was after doing this book. And I was impressed with him. He's a very articulate guy and endlessly fascinating.
You know, I read in the preface that you've not met Leonard Cohen. Do you have one question, you know, that you have left unanswered at the end of this project for him?
You know, I really don't think so. I've got 50 years of interviews in here, and just about anything that you might want to ask him, somebody's asked. I might mention that on my website, there's a lot more information about Leonard Cohen and my other book as well, byjeffberger.com. That's byjeffberger.com.
We've been speaking with Jeff Berger. He's the editor of Leonard Cohen on Leonard Cohen, Interviews and Encounters, published by Chicago Review Press. Leonard Cohen is 80 on September 21st. Jeff Berger, it's just been a pleasure to have you on the roundtable, and thanks for the book.
Thank you so much.
And you're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.